Hello everybody, this is Mark Lewis, author of Didymetrics 101. Welcome to the audio recording of my Understanding Objects presentation. I originally gave this presentation to the STC Suncoast chapter back in 2003. Several pieces of the content in this presentation are from the book Object Technology, A Manager's Guide, a book by David Taylor. This content is reused with permission from David Taylor. This book is a great resource. You do not need to understand programming or XML to benefit from the concepts in this book. I strongly recommend this book. I believe that understanding how to perform object-oriented design is an extremely valuable skill that will benefit most everyone in the product development lifecycle. So, let's get started. When you hear the doorbell sound, please advance to the next slide.
Some slides are only going to be on for even a few seconds. So I'm going to try to teach a lot by example in the middle because that seems to work well. And we're going to shoot for about an hour and 5 minutes. We're going to have a little intermission in the middle. I'm Mark Lewis. I've got about 10 years of experience doing object-oriented design methodologies. For software development, the idea of using objects gives you the ability to reuse code in whatever language that you're doing. It also gives you the ability to maintain code in one single point. You get the same thing in technical writing when you're designing objects that add structure to your content. There's very, very much a parallelism between the two. So you get the reuse, you get the single point of maintenance in both worlds. When we're done, you'll be able to look around and think of this hotel as an object and start breaking it down. So we're going to focus on the basics. We're not going to get into any of the weird programming stuff that I know some of y'all in this room know. But we're going to focus on the basics. In addition to understanding some programming concepts and being able to write about software. For example, if your company is developing an application programming interface or a software development kit that would be used for integrating their software with other packages, if you find that you're going to have to write about that, you'll be able to use this. Or if you're going to get into content management systems and you're going to have to learn XML, which is structured content, you'll be able to use this. It's used in a lot of different industries in a very parallel way. Not too long ago, some people were here from Pilgrim Software and they were talking about Authorit. It's object-oriented based. It's becoming more and more prevalent in our industry. So if you're heading in any of these directions, I hope you'll be able to use this. We're going to work through some definitions for technical writers. Got a whole bunch of examples. Got book recommendations. And when we're done, you'll be able to think and do and speak object-oriented design. We're going to go through some definitions and concepts. We're going to understand what simple objects are, composite objects, behaviors and methods, responsibilities, encapsulation, inheritance, and then at the very end, I'm going to bring it all into the content management world and show how all this fits into that. So we're going to get through the definitions first, and then we're going to run to the examples. This is my definition of an object. It's what it is, what it does, and how it interacts with other objects. That's the most simple definition of an object that I can come up with. Whenever I'm explaining it, it's the what it is about a thing, what it does, and how it fits with other objects around it, how it interacts with other objects. For us, objects will be content. For programmers, it's code, it's software. For everybody else, it can be the ability to break down the things in their environment into classifications or categorizations. Objects of a like share a common structure. They share common attributes or characteristics and common behaviors. They also have a predictable or a fixed relationship with other objects. Some programming lingo is classes, attributes, and behavior. And we'll get through these, and I'll bring them full circle with examples. A class is essentially, it's a blueprint of an object. People use them in the same paragraph. They really mean the same thing, but most of the time you'll hear class definition, and that lays out the structure of an object. So it's a blueprint. It's the description. An attribute is a characteristic of an object. A characteristic of this light bulb up here is its luminosity, or its length, or what voltage it runs at. Those are all attributes of a light. Behavior. This is something that an object does, an activity of the object. What it does and what it's responsible for. The light shines. That's a behavior versus a characteristic. It's something that it does. Programming lingo for a behavior, they use property and they use methods. So if you get into writing about an API or writing about SDK, software development kit, those are the terms that you'll need to be familiar with. This is a mouthful, but I brought it in because it's true. It's what we're going to be focusing on. It's a categorization or classification of things that allows us to organize functionality or information content in a way that it can be reused and repurposed. The strategy here is finding the things that are common in objects and what they do and what they are. Another way of saying it is finding the commonality in the attributes and the behaviors. Nature is very object-oriented. And if you think about a cell in the human body, it's a very, very simple object. It has a lot of different characteristics or attributes. Those two words are interchangeable. There's a lot of different types of cells, and they share these characteristics here. They have different types of cells that have their own unique characteristics or attributes. This is what differentiates them and creates the exceptions. But all we're doing here is we're creating a classification or a categorization. This is what a programmer would do. They would say, oh, well, I've got a cell in the body. Well, what is it? Well, it's all of these things. And, well, hang on a second. There's all different types of cells in the body. Well, what are some things that are different? Well, you have these different types. And then you get this hierarchy that begins to form. And that's the beginning of object-oriented design. These cells form together to make up an organ. So you go from a very simple object to a collection of cells, which forms a larger object, which forms an entire body. Nature in itself is very object-oriented. You could describe the whole body, break it down using these design tools. So some common attributes of a muscle cell are that it has a membrane, nucleus, and a bunch of other things I can't pronounce. These are common to all muscle cells. A blood cell, well, it's got the same attributes. Okay. At least the very basic attributes. Well, a nerve cell, it's the same way. It's got these same common attributes or characteristics. So, hey, we can create our first object. A simple one. We'll call it cell. Now, I put a little C in front of it because that's programming lingo, and if you get into that, you'll see it. So, this is our cell object. Well, it has a membrane, nucleus, and those unpronounceables. And what we have done is take everything that's common in what a cell is and brought it into this blueprint of a class or an object that we're going to call a simple cell. Here's another example of a simple object. Well, Okay. An employee, well, employees have contact information or address information. In addition to that, they also have other things about them, name, social security number, gender, da-da-da. Well, what about a company? Well, they've got some similar attributes or characteristics. They have some things that are unique about them, such as employment identification number, the type of corporation that they are. Well, a vendor, hey, they got some of the same attributes as well. Well, you know, it'd be nice if we could kind of group the things that are common, the characteristics that are common together in one spot and call it an address object. So now we've localized everything into this one simple object called an address by focusing on the things that are common to each of those different entities. That's the whole strategy tonight, is focusing on what's the commonality and what a thing does, and what a thing is and what a thing does. So in addition to simple objects, we have composite or complex objects, and these objects are composed of smaller objects. And in this case, we can see, well, hey, if we take the address object that we just designed and we say it's part of an employee, then what we're left with is the things that are unique about an employee, the everything else. And we can do the same thing for a company. We say, well, a company's got an address, and we can reuse that object right there. Reuse, just like content management, the buzzwords are reuse and repurpose. So that's the reuse concept. A vendor, it also has an address, so we can reuse that class or object there. A company may have many different addresses, so we can reuse this object by giving different names to the different types of addresses that are out there. We're going to say that these addresses have all the same characteristics or attributes, but we're just going to give them a different name to differentiate them. Here's an example of a composite object that's reusing the address object that we created multiple times. Now, earlier I was talking about being able to maintain something very easily because you're only maintaining it in one point. Well, let's decide a little bit later that we want to add some new things like a fax number, a phone number, and an email address. Well, if we had an employee object over here with all its address information and everything that's unique about it, and then over here we had the company with its address information and everything that's unique about it, the vendor, da da da. If we had to go and add this information, we'd be adding it in three different places, to the employee object, to the company object, and to the vendor object. But because we've already designed an address object, which is being reused, now we only have to change it in one place. We can add these three new attributes or characteristics in one spot. When programmers go to maintain software, this is a beautiful thing because they only have to change it in one spot. And this is where they are able to justify the more expensive or longer design time because maintenance is reduced on the back end. The same thing is true for technical writers. When you structure your content or do a better job of designing your content up front such that you get to reuse content or information objects, then the cost of maintaining that will go down. That's what they're doing. Okay, we were talking about attributes and characteristics, which is the what a thing is. Behaviors are the what it does. Some behaviors of our cell object that we can add to it that are common are that, well, cells grow. Every cell grows. Every cell reproduces and takes nutrients, outputs waste, and they kind of send messages to each other. Those are common behaviors. So again, it's the what it does and also kind of what it's responsible for. Well, we talked about three different types of cells. And here are some behaviors that are the exceptions, the things that are unique to them. A muscle, what does it do that's different from all the other cells? Well, it contracts and it relaxes. Blood cells absorb and release oxygen. That's their uniqueness. And a nerve, well, it does what I finally decided to call it interstate messaging, because all cells kind of communicate with each other, but nerves send messages all the way across the body. So I label it interstate messaging for long distance. So these are things that are done by these cells that are unique outside of that cell object that we designed. Programming lingo, again, a behavior is also known as a method. Something that might be more concrete for us is the concept of a business letter. Can y'all tell me how you would start to break down a business letter? What are the characteristics and attributes of a business letter? Okay, salutation.
Inside address.
Inside address.
Date.
Date. Yeah. So you just broke down a business letter into its components. Now we can say, okay, well, could you design a business letter object now? Yeah. Getting a feel for what it's all about. It's looking at things and breaking them down and saying, okay, well, what's fixed? What never changes? And what are the attributes of this thing? Whether it's content or whether it's a car or a building, anything you can start to break down and categorize its behavior and what it is and what it does. Again, we talked about composite objects, where you have smaller objects that are organized into bigger objects and further bigger objects. There's a concept called collections, and a collection is a fancy word for a set. Programmers use collections. We can use it too. And the concept of the human body, a liver is a collection of cells, and a human body is a collection of organs. So collection is a buzzword. No, it's not a buzzword, it's terminology. And it's applicable to many, many different objects. For example, in a resume, if we break it down into its components, you have your name, you have your contact information, your objective, your skills, da-da-da. In terms of collections, you have a set of skills, right? So we could design a skills object and have a collection of those being part of our resume object. Experience. Well, you often have a list of experience, so we could design an experience object and have a collection of those. So our experience object might look something like this. Might have the range of time that we worked or had this job experience, the company that we worked at, position, description. And y'all know what a resume is. But now you can see, if I put on my object-oriented glasses, oh, okay, well, I can break that down into this and this and this and this. And that's content. That's an example of a structured content. I'm going to skip this one for time. And now it's intermission time. Intermission time includes chocolate. So stand up, stretch, look around, take a short break. Pass the chocolate around. We have a very proud sponsor of this tonight's presentation, Factoids. They're made with curiously strong content. Who in the room is thinking about content management system? Who's learning about it? Who's getting into it? I want a very solid hand raise. Okay, so they're thinking surrender for. Okay, keep your hand up. Keep your hand up. Put your left hand up. Who is interested in learning about? Keep your hand up. Who's interested in learning about as object methodologies in general? Raise your other hand. And we have a lot. Oh, my gosh. Okay. Tickets. Pull out your tickets. These are two really good books. This one here, called Object Technology, A Manager's Guide, is pretty good. It covers a lot of the basics that I'm covering tonight and goes a little bit further. Some of the programming books that I've read about object-oriented design are really bad. This one, but it's the best one I've found so far. You'll find it in the back of your notes. I need y'all to draw. I need a person to draw a sticky.
Thank you.
This is another good book on content management systems. It's called Managing Enterprise Contents, written by Ann Rockley. She's given a lot of presentations. You may have seen some of them online. They're very good. I've read. It's pretty good stuff. Give me another number there. I'm going to go a little bit deeper before I get into the content management. Everybody knows what a refrigerator is. Let's see if we can break it down. Really, a refrigerator, I say the bottom section, the non-freezer section. I end up calling that, saying, well, that's in the fridge. It's in the fridge. I mean, that section. Now this is the freezer. And so when I started doing this, I'm like, well, wait a minute. So I just went ahead and said, okay, a refrigerator as a whole is the fridge and the freezer part. Some of the attributes of a refrigerator are, well, it's got a freezer, and the freezer has a capacity or a volume. The fridge section also has a capacity and a volume. They each have their own temperature. It's got doors, it's got drawers, and it's got a color. So that's our first pass breakdown of the refrigerator object. But what's the difference between the freezer section and the fridge section? Okay. Temperature, size, okay. What about the temperature?
Colder.
Okay. You can set the temperature in both of them. They both have a temperature. Work with me.
All right. Fancy refrigerator.
Let's pretend that you can set the temperature of both. They both have a temperature. They both have a capacity. But if we think about it, we could actually break this down into something called, I just came up with the name, cooling unit. Not a really cool name, but that was an accidental pun, sorry. A cooling unit, let's see if we can design an object that covers both. They both have a capacity. They both have whatever the current temperature is. They both have a maximum and minimum temperature. They both have a light. There are some people out there that have lights in their freezers. They both have drawers. They both have a door, color, whatever their dimensions are. So now what we've done is we've come up with the ability, we've come up with a design of an object for a cooling unit that can cover both. Okay, well, what does that get us? That gives us the ability to say that a refrigerator is made up of two cooling units. One, we're just going to name it the freezer section, the other, the fridge section. Now, the freezer cooling unit, we can change the attributes of that independently of the fridge section, but as objects, the list of attributes that they each have are the same. So we have reused our cooling unit object. So we could even design a refrigerator thing that has three cooling units in our little programmatic world here. You're not limited to a static number of cooling units. We could have eight in our world if we wanted to. One step further, we talked about the concept of collections. Here, because the cooling units are being reused, we can say, well, a refrigerator is a collection or a set of cooling units to kind of drive the concept of collections home. To get a little bit more, a little bit of programming terminology, but you'll see this in content management a little bit. Typically, a composite object, something that's made up of simpler objects, is typically known as the parent object. The object that's smaller, that's embedded inside of it, is typically referred to as the child object. And you'll start hearing as you begin to learn this, of parent-child relationships. And that's what the programmers are often into, is who's the parent, and who's the child, and who owns who, and who's responsible for what. Mark,
In this example of CMR,
yeah.
The parent is
at this level the refrigerator, and it has two child objects.
Okay.
Right here. Same thing, this is the parent, and this has a child object, which is a collection of.
And that could be
so,
any number.
Yeah, and that could be any number in our magical world. Pardon? Right, if you wanted to start to break a book down, then you would have chapters and sub-chapters. Perfect example of a parent-child relationship. So as you start to figure out how to structure content that you want to bring into a content management system, you're going to start to break it down. You're going to want to look for these relationships, these types of structures, who's responsible for what, how they all fit together. Okay, a little bit more programming stuff here. In terms of attributes and characteristics, what programmers do is they take the values and they set them. For example, in the cooling unit, you can set the temperature. Well, they also may want to know what is the temperature. So that getting and setting is something that programmers do, and they do it for every single attribute. So what you'll find is something called a behavior for accessing data. This is the what it is, the capacity, the dimensions, the temperature. Those are the what it is versus what it does. And programmers will want to, in our virtual refrigerator that we've designed here, they'll want to get and set the capacity of the refrigerator. They want to get the dimensions of the refrigerator and do something with it, or set the dimensions of it. Different is a behavior that does something for a programmer in terms of what it does. A door opening or closing is an activity or an action. And if we say pretend we're looking at the PC screen and we've got this virtual refrigerator that's drawn on the screen, being able to write a program that makes the door open and close is something that a programmer might do. And these are, again, these are behaviors that drive what the thing does versus getting and setting the color and seeing that change on the screen.
Mark,
yes?
I have a question. What would be the difference between, like, setting the temperature and the behavior that does something like closing the door?
This seemed very similar. Yes, this is. This is. These are concepts that, for the people that are going to learn about application programming interfaces, that are going to work with programmers more, these are concepts that will benefit you. I apologize. These are kind of heavier concepts. And more in the programming, but I wanted to just give a brief introduction about them. This is really all that I'm going to say about them, and it'll kind of, it's kind of the when you don't know what you don't know, it'll help you that you can say, oh, well, I don't know enough about this, and I need to go learn more about this concept of encapsulation. When you have something like our refrigerator that has a characteristic, they need to be able to modify that. A program needs to be able to modify that versus telling the refrigerator to do something. Telling the refrigerator to turn its light on or off is an activity. It's making the refrigerator do, invoke a behavior is what it's called, versus just... Sure. Actually, that's not true. It's a good shot, and I appreciate it. But in our world, in our little world that we've designed here, the color can be changed. You can change the color, dynamically change the color of the refrigerator. We can make it grow, the fridge grow or shrink. That's the dimensions and capacity. But the refrigerator having a different color isn't something that it does, and that's kind of the dividing line between these. Turning its light on is something that it does, but just being of a certain size is not a is a what it is versus what it does.
Okay. On a dialysis machine, you can change the temperature that the dialysate is going to be at. That would, I assume, be a guest set type thing where you go to the screen that has that allows you to set up
the temperature
itself.
So.
Mm-hmm. You can set it within a range, and it should keep it there. You can go back and change the range later if you wish, but as long as you leave it set and don't go back and change it, it's going to stay there. But giving a heparin bolus is something you trigger, and then it adds heparin into the dialysate flow at a certain rate and all that sort of thing. So you trigger the heparin bolus. You make the machine give that
do something.
That thing, as opposed to setting up its characteristics.
Yeah,
is it closer or
not? That's a very good example. This was the hardest slide to figure out how, the hardest concepts to figure out how to teach y'all, because unless you're going to be dealing with the programmers, you probably won't use this, but I wanted to expose you to encapsulation and this concept. It's about hiding some of the characteristics and attributes within these objects, and you had your hand up. True.
So
yeah.
The get color could be red, blue, yellow, orange, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Then once they select it, then it sets that color.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing with the dimensions. There's always going to be something in there defined that it's going to get from.
A list of choices?
Choices.
It could be designed that way, yes. Something that it can be something it's responsible for, or something that it actually does. Let's leave it at that. This was the tough one. This is the one I was like, okay, let's see if I can get through this. So we'll leave it at that. Okay, you'll find a glossary at the back with definitions sprinkled in it. You can dig into those at your leisure. Those are at the very back with the book recommendations. So a quick review, we talked about, we designed our cell object and how it has a blueprint of all the attributes or characteristics that are common to all cells. We also looked at behaviors that are common to all cells, what it does versus what it is. Behaviors are what an object can do and what it's responsible for. We also talked about concept of unique behaviors that are unique to certain objects. In this case, a blood cell that it absorbs and releases oxygen where other cell types don't do that. This brings us into a concept called inheritance. And this this you will see in the programs like Authorit and other content management systems. What we're doing is we're saying we're looking for the commonality and bringing that into an object and designing as much as we can into this very simple object that's common to everybody. And then we start to look for the things that are unique about the other types of objects. And what that allows us to do is say, hey, I've got a muscle cell. Well, it's based off of our, we've got a muscle cell object, and it's based off of our cell object. But in addition to everything that's in our cell object, it also can contract and relax. Those are things that are unique about the muscle object. The blood cell, it gets all the characteristics and attributes about our basic cell, plus it can absorb and release oxygen. Those are things unique about it. Nerve cell, its unique characteristic is that it has its interstate messaging. These cells, these cell types that are based off of our simple cell, are doing a concept that's called inheriting. They get everything from this base object for free. They're based upon it. This is called inheritance. They're inheriting the characteristics and attributes of the base object. And the little definition down at the bottom reiterates that. If we were to think about inheritance in terms of the employee, well, employee has name, social security number, gender, contact information. We can create an object for an employee where it has these attributes, plus it uses our address object that we designed earlier. Then we can say, well, you know what, I've got some types of employees that have some different characteristics, such as a salaried employee. I'm going to base it off of the employee object that we created and then list what's unique about it. Our salaried employee is inheriting from the employee object that we created earlier. It's getting everything for free, everything that an employee is and does in our simple employee object. The salaried employee gets it for free, but it also has accrued vacation and accrued sick time. Similarly, we can create other types of employees, such as hourly full-time and hourly part-time, that are based upon the simple employee object and get everything that it is and does, but they also have some unique attributes of their own. So again, what we're doing is we're looking for commonality. Everything that's in the employee object, every employee does. Every employee of every type does. So we compartmentalize that here. And then we say, okay, with this common base object, from that, then we look for the things that are unique are here, but they are pulling from that employee object. And that's the strategy of object-oriented design. To bring this into the concept of content management, you can think about designing a form that somebody enters information into, or the structure of a slide, its title, its the body, where you put graphics. You can structure your content within a slide. That in itself is designing an object. It also can be referred to as a template, but don't confuse it with a word template, because a word template is just a bunch of styles. It's the way things look. It's the fonts and the point sizes. Whereas a template, in terms of an information object or a content object, is the structure. It's the components. It's the breakdown of the business letter. If you have a skeleton of a business letter, that's what we're talking about, not a word template. In terms of using this in a content management system, I'm working on a project where we've got some concepts, business entities that we're describing. And the three main components are that in our business world, we have vendors and companies and employees, and we have a we have definition content, we have usage content, and we have special considerations content. We are structuring our content that we're using to describe all the business entities in our software. And what this shows is that in our software development kit documentation, we are reusing, and this is what's called a reuse map. We're reusing this piece of content here in some core education slides and some end user slides and in some reference guides. The special considerations, well, we're only reusing them here and here. And the usage, we're only reusing it in a few places, a few different documentation products. What you're doing here is you're taking a design of a content object and you're looking at how you can satisfy the products that you need to deliver and reuse those pieces all over the place. Write them once, write about things once, and then reuse them in all of your documentation products. That's called a reuse map, and that's in that Ann Rockley book. They go into that in detail. It's a very good description of that. As a brief example, I don't really care where things are stored. Once I structure my content, I don't care whether my definition is stored in a database or whether it's stored in XML or stored in a flat ASCII file. You do care when you get it, when you want to pull from it and publishing it, but you can design your content objects almost independent of your tools that you're using, of how it's stored. Briefly, as an example, here this is a definition of an employee, the usage of an employee, and the special considerations content. We don't need to read it, we just need to know that it's there. And what we did was we prototyped a reference guide where we brought in the definition, usage, and special considerations. We took that same content and we reused it in training slides with using just the definition and the usage portion. Some other attributes of the employee are its social security number, organization that it belongs to, and in here we're using that definition content and usage content. So we have created multiple documentation products reusing content that we've written. It's in one place. Well, somebody says, well, hey, you know, this part right here is wrong. I can go into the content management system, I can fix it in one place, and I can republish the training guide or reference guide, and I can republish these slides. I don't have to maintain it in one spot. It's a beautiful thing for technical writers, just like it is for programmers, if you only have to maintain stuff in one spot. That's the reuse concept. That's the repurpose concept. We talked about some basic definitions and concepts. We designed some of our own simple objects, some composite objects. We discussed behaviors, methods. We tried to discuss encapsulation. We dabbled in inheritance, which is a part of a content management system, and we saw how we are actually reusing content that's structured in multiple documentation products. Again, the strategy is looking for the commonality in what a thing is, what a thing does. Another way of saying it using the lingo is, what's the commonality in its attributes and its behaviors? How you design something can depend on your goals. Kind of what Irene was referring to is, you can skin a cat a bunch of different ways. You can design objects different ways as well, but you design them to satisfy your goals, and that's going to depend on whatever the project is that you're working on, whatever your needs are. We talked about why this is important for software developers, and we talked about why it's important for technical writers and the parallelism of how, in both cases, you get the ability to reuse something. You have a single point of maintenance. We talked about how being able to think about things in terms of objects will help you write about an application programming interface or a software development kit. And we talked about how those concepts are used in structuring content for a content management system. These are the books that we talked about. I recommend them both. There's some additional resources. There's some good slides out on Ann Rockley's site, and you can go out there and sign up for some of her online presentations. The glossary, and oops, there was a thank you slide in there, but I got past it. Thanks for hanging in there. There's some concepts that I've only taught to programming types, and I really wanted to expose them to you a little bit so you can go off and learn more about them on your own. So thanks for hanging in there. Any chocolate left?